Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Hey, it's Food Prime Friday. We're live in Connellville this afternoon. It's the Knights of Columbus Hall, also known as the Diesel Banquet Center. And my GPS, when I was heading out here a couple hours ago, guided me into the back of the building.
That's not good.
No, and the gate was closed, so I was maybe getting a message that was sent to me. But we'll hopefully guide you out here better than that. And there's still time to come by and get some fish and say hi. We've had a ton of listeners that have come by here this afternoon.
You got to tell this story.
This is pretty, Jane. I don't even know if you heard this.
Jane,
yet.
You may have heard this. When that woman walked by and after Sue's news, and she just looked over and said, "Mr. Pickles," and kept going.
Is that hilarious? Because yeah. I like Mr. Pickles.
Yeah, that name might stick. I don't know. We'll have to see.
Uh-huh. I think we're going to get him a T-shirt with Mr. Pickles.
Yep, it made me happy.
St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman is with us this afternoon. He has sat down at our table, and we were just talking about this. We haven't seen each other in a couple of years since I did another one of these in St. Charles proper. We've talked on the phone, but how are you, Steve?
I'm fine, Mark.
Get real close to that mic since we got so many people out here.
How are you doing?
We're doing well.
Good.
We're happy to be out here again in St. Charles County on a field trip. We had a lot of fun when we did that one a couple summers ago. This is our Fish Fry Friday tour. I should remind folks, also, we're going to take next Friday off. We'll be at the VFW Hall in O'Fallon on the 7th on Good Friday.
Yay!
But let's talk about some things that are going on out here. And let me first, an impression of Cottleville. I used to, Jim Sorrell, who helped arrange some of this for us here, has invited me for years, and I think maybe 4 or 5 years I would come out here to the Christmas tree lot at the Knights of Columbus Hall. Outstanding quality Christmas trees. But, you know, as so often is the case with the pandemic, it throws you off things. I hadn't been here for 3 years. I drive in, and there's brand new apartments. I mean, it was like a different place within a couple of years. Yeah.
I don't know if they still do, but 10, 15 years ago, their sign said population growing.
Yeah, right.
They didn't bother to even put a number on it.
So what, you know, I have a couple of good friends that live out here, but Connellville's kind of like a, what would you describe? It's like a sleepy little charming town that makes you feel like you're maybe somewhere else, right?
Well, it's a, you know, we've got 5 major cities in St. Charles County, and we got 3 or 4 more that have a chance to be large cities someday, and I think Cottleville's one of them.
Wow.
But, yeah, right now it's kind of in between. It still has a lot of that charm of being a kind of a small town. But it's going to be a major suburb someday. And they have their own police force. But they still kind of rely on the county for roads and some other things. And they're going to grow out of that. And they're going to be a city just like St. Peter's, St. Charles, O'Fallon.
What makes it so appealing out here is because there's more land and this is the area to expand, right? Is there anything else?
Oh, yeah.
Good infrastructure.
We got St. Louis County.
In Cottleville, have you seen Highway 364?
Yeah,
364, which we talked about and planned for 25 years, which finally became a reality about 10 years ago. And, of course, it goes right through the city of Cottleville. And if anybody, maybe nobody profited more, I think, than this particular area.
From that expansion.
From getting that expansion done. I mean, you're where we are right here, I mean, you're 10, 15 minutes from the airport.
And it makes it real easy for county residents to get out here.
Yep.
And so that it is a real connector. Yeah. I mean, it's that kind of infrastructure, though, that will cause growth that we're not really seeing in other areas of the region.
But I'm hearing there's a lot of interest even from, you know, big restaurants. You know, they see the growth, right? There's economic growth out here as well, and that's going to be appealing to a lot of people.
When I was growing up in St. Charles, I mean, you know, there were shops out here, but if you're really serious about shopping, you had to go to St. Louis. If you're really serious about a good restaurant, you had to go to St. Louis.
It's not like that anymore.
You can still go to St. Louis, and a lot of us do, but we don't have to.
But, Steve, let's kind of get into the crime issue here and the region, because a lot of people won't go downtown right now. I think they'll go for Cardinals games, and some people will say they won't go, and they might still go to a Blues game or a Cardinals game. But this is real right now, and people don't feel safe. We don't seem to have – how many years have we talked? You've been St. Charles County executive for how long now?
16 years.
Okay, we've been talking about this forever, about regional leadership and growth, and has there been any even incremental progress on that?
I think there has, but it's been very recent. And some of us have been working for a long time, including some people sitting at this table.
Yep.
Sue, you've done a good job.
Yeah, thanks. I want to thank everyone for their support.
Right, there you go.
No, I tell you, Dennis Gannon, who's the executive director in Jefferson County,
yes.
And Tim Brinker in Franklin mm-hmm. County, and myself, we've been working at least for the last 5 years to try to raise awareness. All of our counties are doing well. We're all growing. And
yes.
We'll continue to grow for a while and do well. But if the region doesn't get its act together, it's just a matter of time before St. Charles is a no-growth area like the rest of the region. And the key to doing that is solving the crime problem.
Absolutely.
It's the number one most important thing.
You're so right. And he's one of the few people, you're one of the few people, Steve, that talk about the importance of the entire area.
Region.
Why people are so short-sighted on that, it makes me nuts.
Well, the crime problem is a tragedy for the people in the city who are experiencing it most. But it's a problem everywhere, and we've had more crime out here than we're used to, and we've responded to it and created task force, and our police are doing a great job. And when we do have a serious crime, you read 3 days later about we've solved it. We got somebody behind bars, which hopefully the courts will deal with. But in the city, it's just totally broken from the prosecuting attorney on down. And the police there, I'm told, the police are afraid to do their job because they got a tough job, and they're afraid if they make a mistake, they're going to
be prosecuted.
I be prosecuted.
And they're not safe. I mean, that's the other thing. When you're short-staffed, and, you're more likely to go to a police department in St. Charles or in a municipality in St. Louis County because, one, you're going to be – it's going to be better quality of life. You're going to get paid more. And, when the political leadership isn't behind law and order, that makes it very difficult. And I don't know how – like you say, I don't know how a region gets past that. And we are stronger together. We really are stronger together. But you can't when there's such a fundamental disagreement about something that is that fundamental.
The people that have been working on this, I think the key has been, and the biggest change has been, the business community has finally woken up. I mean, it was 2 years ago in the state chamber said 85% of their members in St. Louis identified crime as
the number one issue.
And the Business Journal said 90% not too many months ago. And finally, and I don't know if it's because they were just afraid of retaliation to speak up against the leadership in the city, but it's gotten to
my opinion, it is.
That's part of it. A lot of it is, nobody really understood it until the crime started happening in front of their business. But that's happened now, and
it's
I think getting the business community involved is going to be the key.
I've seen a fundamental change. Like we had the state chamber has been down in Jeff City, testifying on these bills, saying crime is everything. And they're finally saying
it. Okay, but let me just read this. Jane brought this up, and I had not listened or watched to the interview that the mayor did, a sit-down interview with this guy from Channel 5. What's his name?
Mark Maxwell,
who's a political reporter there. And this is one of her answers. I don't have the audio. I'm going to pull some of this for Monday. But here's what she says about crime. I think they're hearing a message from me that we're going to attack crime at the root cause. This is about transforming public safety. This is about making sure that we're deploying the right resource to the right call, because what we've been doing has not been working and has not made our city safer. So we have to try new and innovative things in order to get different results. Knocking our head against a brick wall and expecting the same result is the definition, or expecting a different result is the definition of insanity. Okay, she says we're trying new and innovative things. Is she talking about what's happened in the last 2 years?
Yes.
Or before? Because what's not working is her leadership in the city of Missouri.
Absolutely.
Or in the city of St. Louis, rather.
Yeah, this is when you defund something, you turn it into a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
You dismantle the police department, then you claim that it's not working. That is a major problem. That's all this is.
But, Steve, how I would have – this is so sad. How can you have, after reading something like that And finally, you've had people come over on Kim Gardner, but you know it took a long time, right? Some of the civic leaders, et cetera.
Six and a half years.
Any confidence that this is going to change in the city?
The only time that I've spoken with Kim Gardner was about 4 or 5 years ago. It was before the pandemic. A Business Journal had a breakfast and had several leaders from the region up there, and we had ability to ask each other questions. And I said, Madam Prosecutor, just imagine that you get a phone call this afternoon from a CEO from a large corporation in New York City, and she tells you that she wants to move 1,000 jobs to the city of St. Louis, and there's only one thing holding her back, and that's crime. And she asks you to give her some encouragement. What would you tell her? And Kim Gardner proceeded to do the same old litany of social programs and need to spend more on education. And
the mayor's going to solve poverty.
And we get more jobs. And it was the usual litany.
Wow.
And when she was finished, I said, so what you would tell her then is call back in 15 years.
That's exactly right.
What did you say, Steve?
She didn't say anything.
That's the follow-up question doesn't get asked.
Yeah. Is there things we can do in all those areas to make things better? Yes.
Absolutely.
But that's not going to fix the problem right now when you have people afraid to go down there to the businesses, when you have people in their own homes who are afraid to go out and walk down the street. We need an immediate
solutions.
Response, and then if you want to talk about these long-term things, that's fine too.
Well, and that's the thing, and so that's where the liberal in me comes out, as I say, okay, first of all, the short-term plan has to be get the most dangerous off the streets. Boom. They know who they are. This is not a game. They know who they are. The feds are picking them up. St. Charles is picking them up. But the city is not picking them up. So one, get the dangerous guys off the street. That has to be the short-term, like you say. That has to be the first thing. Medium-term, you start talking about building, rebuilding communities. And then long term is fixing education, fixing poverty. If you're telling me that we have to fix poverty, education, and all of these other issues before we see a reduction in crime, the city will be long gone. The region will have already too.
You should run for county executive or something like that.
Yes,
I like what you're saying.
Is that the only liberal that's left in her? We're in good shape.
I know.
Seriously. there are a lot of them like me, too. I just happen to be the most mouthy.
And that's another important thing here.
Yes.
We got things happening in Jefferson City.
Yep.
And the Republicans can pass laws up there. They got super majorities and everything. Mm-hmm. But they can't fix this without the help of the local Democrats,
right.
Okay?
Now, and there were Democrats that voted for state control.
And absolutely. And it's going to take a bipartisan effort. Mm-hmm. We can get rid of Kim Gardner, but that's just going to stop the bleeding.
Right, exactly.
We got a victim down there.
Fear that we know that this, and it's sad that it took Janae Edmondson as a wake-up call for a lot of people, and she lost her legs, poor girl. But I must say this. It would not surprise me, and I don't think it would surprise anyone at this table right now, if something worse than that happens outside of a Cardinals game or something.
It's inevitable if we don't change.
Yes,
it is
correct.
Inevitable. And Janae is only one of many stories. You heard about her because she was a young volleyball player from out of town. But people in this community, in this region, have been dying like that. And frankly, I think if that poor girl had died, we may not have even had the same conversation.
I think you might be right.
Which is sad because we've gotten numb. Well,
so, Jane, let me ask you this. If Kim Gardner goes, either voluntarily
or the quo or whatever, right?
Is there a good Democrat that can, number one, fix it in the city, fix that that department, and number two, get elected?
Frankly, that's fixing
that, the second part of the question is very important.
That's just as important as the first part.
It is. But I also think that if somebody gets in there, they have the benefit of getting some of the fixes done before an election comes.
Well, but they're not going to have that much time
because there'll
be a special election, you know what it's like running an election when you don't have enough time. Right?
Well, I do, and when you have 10% turnout, that doesn't help either.
Yeah.
But I always say to people that's no reason not to try. Yes, there are some Democrats that are willing to step up.
That's what we need.
People who are willing to step up should the governor appoint them.
And I've already talked to other people in the region. There's prosecutors in these
other
counties
that
will help.
They all want to come in. MAPPA is ready to come in and help. They've offered Kim Gardner help. They offered her lawyers. They offered her help in organizing her office.
She turned it down?
She turned it down. She said, write me a check.
Tim Lomar offered to send people down to help her.
And
there's big law firms that have also said they'll send help. But it's not going to be easy might be easier to get rid of her than it is to actually.
Well, here's the bigger problem too. I think the circuit attorney's office is easier to fix, frankly, because it's, you know, they have one job. Okay, they just need to do their job. I'm frankly more concerned about the police department. If you drain this police department, I don't know how you ever get that back.
It's being drained.
So to me, that's the more difficult. How do you start convincing people to be police officers again in the city of St. Louis? How do you prove that the community will support them when many of them don't? And I think these elections in April are going to say something. I think it's going to be divided, progressive, non-progressive, which means no change at all, which, by the way, no change is a decision to not move forward.
Yep. St. Charles County Executive Steve Ellman has swung by our Fish Fry Friday broadcast out here in Cottleville. Let's talk here a little bit about your county. Do you have, you always have desires and needs from Jeff City. What are you looking for, though, from state lawmakers right now relating to St. Charles County?
Our greatest challenge right now is 911. We've gone through the same challenges as everybody has with keeping our personnel. We've been short of personnel, but we've still been able to keep the same level of service. But we got a bigger problem, and that is the system we bought 7 years ago is now outdated. We need to buy a new system. It's going to cost $12 million. We'll be able to pay for it over 7 years.
How does that get outdated so quickly? And when you say
technology,
system, you're talking about like a combination of hardware and software?
I know. Well, that's been the story of my life. I get to the point where I learn how to use my computer and my
and
phone
changes.
And everything, and then they go change everything on you.
Can't they use ARPA money? You're going to get some ARPA money for that?
Well, we're going to try. The ARPA at the state, but here's the problem. 911, you know how it was funded in the past?
Fred told me, I'm going to cheat. Yeah. Landlines.
A landline.
What?
Yes, landlines.
Are you serious?
I'll bet you there aren't 10 people in this room that have 200 people in. I bet there aren't 10 people that still have a landline.
Wow.
We went from collecting like $2 million a year. We're collecting like $200,000.
I thought you were going to say $200 or something like that.
So you don't have a stream of income to support it.
No, we have no income. And that's been true for a while. And the county and the city have been making up the difference. The county pays about 60% of it. The cities pay about 40% of it. But, yeah, we're going to have to come up with this $12 million.
Do you need legislation to get a new tax to allow you to do it?
Well, that's a good idea takes 2 or 3 years in Jefferson City,
it
and
does.
A tax increase takes longer.
Or at least authorization, right.
But we've asked the budget committee in the House to go ahead and look at possibly contributing a portion of that $12 million just so we can get through or at least pay the first few years so we can save up some money. You know, this is the sort of thing, it's not a sexy type issue.
But it needs to work.
But when you need it, it's the most important thing in your life.
I mean, you ask any city resident, they'll tell you, they will call 911, and there's nothing more terrifying than being in a horrible situation and calling for help, and they put you on hold. Can you? I mean, I
can't even imagine.
Well,
I mean,
if that's not your job as government, like keeping people safe, to me, is everything else is gravy after safety. Safety has to be first. I mean, I just don't understand why we lost that. So now we have that's also another regional problem. 911 is in crisis everywhere with personnel and technology. It'd be nice if
How are they funding in St. Louis County? I mean, was the same revenue stream there?
I don't know.
No, but it's just as ineffective, though. Yeah. They're having, you know, because you remember the little boy who drowned in the swimming pool out at the park?
Yeah. Well, that was the one where the call got routed to Colorado.
It got routed to Colorado. I mean, you have this voice over IP, this voice over, you know, fiber, and it has problems. I mean, we are having a 911 crisis on the whole Eastern District.
That's a major issue.
We had a 7% increase in salaries this year. It's going to help us recruit people.
Good.
And we've got a class right now of people that, you know, answer the phone. We'll answer the phone. We got 9 people. I think 8 of them are going to make it through the class.
Well, that's good.
That's fantastic.
How about your Wentzville curve here? You got solutions on that?
The Wentzville curve? Boy. The only people more difficult to deal with in the federal government is the post office and the railroad.
Oh, God bless.
And you know,
that's
I was
true.
On the phone today with the Patrick McKenna, who's the head of MoDOT, and just talking about what we can do to get the railroads to respond. And, of course, you know, the railroads are kind of down right now, and it might be the time to
get them.
To get them. No, you
because sometimes they won't even tell you who owns the tracks.
Are you accusing me of kicking somebody when they're down?
No, I'm accusing you of strategically using your leverage.
How they that because are they? Is there real estate that is affected by that and by the post office?
Yeah, see, what we are going to do is take a bridge that was built in 1951. That's long enough so four lanes of traffic can get under. We are going to, at our expense, me being the taxpayers of the state of Missouri, we are going to build them a new bridge that's twice as long, so eight lanes of traffic can get under. We're going to do that for them. That bridge would have to be replaced by themselves probably someday.
Because they own it.
You'd think they'd be saying thank you.
So instead, why?
Well, they sent back a bunch of comments and everything and have delayed and set a whole new set of rules now that we have to follow.
Oh, geez.
And instead of letting the contract in June, which we've been talking about doing for the last two years, it's now delayed till October.
Costs go up.
And here's the thing. I mean, I was mad about that, but I'm over it. I've been calling, trying to find out. So what guarantee do we have that when we get to October, they won't come up with some other?
Absolutely.
And the fact is, the railroads just, you know, there's no law
requiring
them to do anything.
You mentioned the post office, too. What is that about?
Oh, we tried to get a new post office in St. Charles. It took 8 years to get it built.
The post office is struggling. I mean, the idea that you're going to get new infrastructure when they're barely making ends meet,
that was hard. That was 10 years ago.
Okay, I got you. Yeah. Steve Ellman, thank you so much for coming by visiting.
Love talking to you.
I love being out here. It's great.
I love talking to you.
Enjoy some fish and some beverages. We'll come back. We have Brad Young hanging out here, our own legal analyst. We're going to visit with him. We have an audio cut of the day live at Fish Fry Friday. Cottleville, the Knights of Columbus Hall, or the Piesold Banquet Center, a.k.a. We're back with more on St. Louis's home for conservative talk, 97.1 FM Talk.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. You'll be glad you did.
We're at Fish Fry Friday. We're in Cottleville at the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's also the Piesold Banquet Center. The crowd has been huge for the last 3 hours. We have a couple more segments to go. Audio cut of the day, and then we're back on Monday. We have a four-day. I have a four-day work next week. We'll be off on Friday. I'll be off, and the team will be with Mike Elam, I think, in the studio. Brad Young is here, 97.1 FM Talk, legal analyst with Harris, Dowell, Fisher & Young. You're not called in for next Friday, are you, for that? I think it's Elam.
Yeah,
it is.
I was double-booked.
Well, that happens. You do have a regular job, right?
I do.
He was telling me you were sitting at the Parkway West table over
here. I was.
Here, which
I
is kind of like, that's my table.
Yeah.
Who's over there? Kids went to Parkway West.
All three of my daughters went there.
Are they here?
Two of them are.
Okay.
And two of the three of my daughters went to Mizzou. And my wife's a journalism grad from Mizzou. So we had Mizzou and Parkway West all represented here at the table.
Look at that. It's a Mark Reardon.
I can't remember your education. Did you go to Mizzou also?
No, I did not. No, I went to St. Louis U for law school.
Okay.
So did I.
What about undergrad? Where did you go undergrad?
Southern Illinois.
Okay.
Basically at SIU Carbondale, where I spent about 8 years there during one four-year stretch.
Wow.
Were you there with Melissa McCarthy?
I was. And Halloween in Carbondale is truly legendary.
You know, I've interviewed her several times, and her husband, I can't remember his name, but they have fond memories of their time in Carbondale. They're loving. They used to come to St. Louis a lot too.
And Bob Odenkirk was also there.
Oh, that's right. I did know that.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the indictment that may never happen. What's your take right now with what's going on in Alvin Bragg's office? And I've even seen coverage, Brad. Look, I look at all the legacy media, the left wing and right wing, and there's a lot of people out there, even in the LA Times and other places, saying, hey, maybe this isn't a really good idea to indict over a charge like this. But where are we? It's a little hard to figure out what's going on because these things, in theory, are all secret with a grand jury, right?
Well, there's the legal side and then there's the political side. And on the legal side, what we've seen is that the grand jury keeps getting postponed. They keep bringing in more witnesses now, and the decision keeps being postponed. And that, generally speaking, indicates that the grand jury can't make up its mind. That's why more witnesses have to come in. So that's it from the legal side. But from the political
side. What
about
the we can indict a ham sandwich thing? I mean, that's so easy.
You can indict a ham sandwich. But when you look at this situation, the ham sandwich has to have done something. And in this instance, the ham sandwich really hasn't done anything that violates the law. Is it kind of underhanded or torrid to settle with a porn star? Yes, it is, but it's not illegal.
Her name is Horseface Stormy Daniels.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Don't forget that. That's what the president says.
Exactly.
Dude, you're the one who... I don't even know what to say.
You get
involved with her and then call her Horseface. What does that say about you?
Okay, my phrase was... You banged her.
Right.
And not, but he says he
you didn't.
You
notice the horse face?
I'm just saying.
Apparently the face wasn't what he was looking at.
Apparently
so,
not.
That's the legal interpretation. There you go, Brad. I like that.
But in this instance, though, the reason why so many Democrats are getting nervous about this is because Alvin Bragg has really staked an enormous amount of cred on this prosecution.
Thank you.
And if this prosecution doesn't happen, if either the indictment doesn't come out or Trump beats it for whatever reason, if you stake all of this on a questionable legal theory and it fails, from a Democrat perspective, aren't you just feeding in and confirming Trump's story, which is it's a witch hunt? And
you are completely. And by the way,
moving this is not what a lot of Democrats want. This is... Right. This just, like, puts, you know, fuel on the fire.
And you know what it reminds me of? But of course, we know Alvin Bragg is of the George Soros group of funded prosecutors. And when you look at Kim Gardner, she expended an enormous amount of capital going after Eric Schmidt at the... Eric Greitens at the expense of prosecuting actual crime. And we have the exact same situation going on in New York.
Except he was going to be impeached. His own Republicans were bringing him down. Kim Gardner didn't bring him down.
She didn't even need to get involved. But going after him politically was more important than tackling crime generally.
Well, don't give Kim Gardner any ideas. She'll indict Trump, and then we really won't get any prosecutions.
But we see the exact same pattern. I mean, the crime is rampant in New York City right now, and instead of focusing on cracking down on real crime, we're going after this phantom legal theory to try to get Trump when there's a questionable legal basis at best.
By the way, on the Kim Gardner front, I wasn't going to revisit this. We spent a lot of time talking about her. But, Jane, I have not read this yet, the latest legal document from
brutal.
Andrew Bailey.
Brad,
oh, it is.
Did you read it?
I read the entire thing.
So did I.
It's brutal. And here's the way it's brutal. As Jane knows because she read through it, I think one of the most damning pieces of evidence in this response from Andrew Bailey is that he chronicles and provides evidence of 12,000 cases.
Oh!
Not 12,000
cases that were dismissed either by their office because of negligence, because of legal malpractice, or because they weren't prepared, or because the judges had to dismiss them because the prosecution wasn't prepared to move forward. 12,000 since 2017.
Brad.
And so when you look at that...
No, if you read this thing, it will make your hair curl.
And by the way...
It's so broken, you can't even begin... You have to start over.
And Andrew Bailey's response is 127 pages long.
Yeah.
Let me put that in perspective. The book, The Old Man and the Sea, is 127 pages. So it's a novel
in terms of its length.
Right.
And it's all organized.
Right,
by
but
all
we sit here, and you and I had these conversations a year ago about what the Supreme Court might do. We had full faith and confidence that there was enough evidence to have the Supreme Court at least step in on a temporary basis and say, you don't have your law license, and it didn't happen. So this is still a complicated legal process that the Attorney General is using. There are no guarantees.
That's why we're passing the bill.
And she's got high-powered attorneys coming in from D.C. on this, too.
She does.
The guy who represented Harvey Weinstein.
Right.
Ronald Sullivan.
Yeah,
But the question that I have...
And who's paying for it?
Is exactly. Yeah, who's paying for this?
Who is paying for it?
We don't know yet.
The reporters
are trying to chase it. The contracts don't go through the city councilor's office. They go through Darlene Green's office. And we don't know who's being paid what. We don't know who's been paying for all of the lawyers she's been hiring.
Can she, legally, though, let me just ask a couple questions, and I don't know. She can take money from a campaign fund to use for attorneys or not?
Well, she can.
Really?
She can take money from a campaign fund because from her perspective, it's furthering her ability to get reelected. So, yes, she can take money from a campaign fund.
She doesn't have any, though.
But...
Right now, unless Soros gives her some
Soros is going to write another check, perhaps.
Jeez.
But to me, the other thing that Andrew Bailey does, I've struggled, Mark, up to this point as to understanding why Kim Gardner refuses to prosecute crime. And I've always guessed and I kind of knew, but one thing that Andrew Bailey revealed is that she received in-house training by the Vera Institute. The Vera Institute is a legal, information training company that's wholly funded by George Soros.
Oh, great.
And the point of the Vera Institute is to not prosecute people who commit crimes.
And even its founder has come out and said, we've gone too far.
Yeah. And that's that. And that explains, so that gives you the why.
Right. Well, that's what happened right away. I mean, he went in and said, this is how you're going to redo everything. She didn't come up with this stuff on her own.
Not on her own. Not at all.
And so, yeah, the Vera guy came out and said, yeah, I think we've gone too far. But what's happened now is you've completely transformed the circuit attorney's office in St. Louis, and it's all going to have to be redone. It's all going to have to be.
So when you put this together, you see, number one, she's trained to not prosecute crime in order to rectify the racial imbalance in the court system. Number two, we've got 12,000 cases that were dismissed since 2017. And you put that together, and you see that it's not negligence. It's a plan of action.
Wow.
That her failure to prosecute isn't just, we're overwhelmed.
It's by design. Equalizing the number of minority people in the criminal justice system solely for that goal alone.
Okay, but can I ask a question that's going to seem like I'm just trying to crack a joke here, but I'm with a couple of lawyers. Can she use that as her defense? Say, hey, it wasn't negligence. This was all on purpose. I'm being serious.
Oh, that would almost be worse because actually...
Willful is in the statute.
Yeah, uh-huh. her defense has been, I'm inadequate.
Well, or her staff is inadequate.
Correct.
She literally blamed her staff. Yeah. For all of this.
She did. She threw her staff under the bus. That's a real leader that throws their staff
under
the bus.
Who would want to get in? She's lost people, but how do you replace people in that office? We're talking about cops and stuff. Right.
So you don't.
You don't. That's why they have like,
firestorm,
there was
right?
60 and now there's like 20 or 25.
Right.
This is why the mayor needs to be more forceful. We got an aldermanic board president, Megan Green, that doesn't care about this stuff. But why isn't there more pressure on Kim to do the right thing? We had the news conference. We had Tishar that came out and said one thing about this. And now there's been nothing. You know, now it's the legal proceedings.
Well,
they
figured out that she's not going.
Right.
They stuck their neck out and said she kind of needs to go. I mean, not in those words, but
she's lost the trust of the people.
That's pretty bad.
Yes, that's very bad.
And so, but she, what did Kim do? She held a rally with her 13 supporters and her protesters.
And doubled down.
She isn't leaving voluntarily. They're going to have to remove her.
All right. I want to visit with Brad on one more case here before we get to our final segment. I read about this in the Wall Street Journal, way above my head, this Jack Daniel's trademark case. But it's interesting. So explain what's going on here.
I love this case. A company comes out with a chew toy, and it's shaped just like a bottle of Jack Daniel's.
Right.
But instead of it being called Jack Daniel's, it's called Bad Spaniels.
That's right.
And instead of saying the old number 7 on Jack Daniel's, it says the old number 2 on the carpet. And so Jack Daniel's didn't think it was funny. I think it's hilarious.
It's hilarious.
Funny.
So there's been various cases at the lower levels going back and forth. But to me, oral argument was this week at the Supreme Court. And Justice Kagan had the best line.
All the way to the Supreme, right?
It's at the Supreme,
it's real
right?
money.
But Justice Kagan had the best line. She said, and I'm almost quoting here from memory, but she said, I don't have a great sense of humor, but I don't even understand how this could possibly be funny. That's what Justice Kagan said. And so I was just imagining all of these black-robed judges steeped in tradition, in honor, there's granite and wood and stone, and the voice of Moses is carved
into the
granite, and they're arguing about a chew toy and whether people are going to get confused with
a
bottle of Jack Daniel's.
But number 2 on the carpet is funny.
It's hilarious.
Yes. I don't. This seems so ridiculous. Aren't there similarities though to this? Do you remember
the case? But it must be a lot of money.
I just looked this up. Well, I guess. But remember, this was. Oh my God, this was 13 years ago. You remember the South Butt?
Yes.
The kid from Ledoux that was doing the South Butt. North Face got involved. Now there was a settlement in that deal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But why would you? This, by the way, if Jack Daniel's loses this, boy, you're giving a lot of free publicity to the chew toy,
to Bad Spaniels chew toys, available at PetSmart everywhere. But It is. But the seriousness of it is that parody is an exception to the Trademark and Copyright Act.
It should be.
And it is. That's why Saturday Night Live exists.
Right.
Okay? If you make fun of something.
It used to.
Old SNL. Right. Old SNL. New SNL, completely different. But parody is that exception. But the way the courts look at this, Mark, is that if it's not an independent expressive work and is simply ripping off what it's supposed to be parodying, then it cannot be an independent expressive act. So here's the difference. In South Butt, it was the exact same product as North Face, exact same product. They just changed the name.
Right.
So there was an element of brand confusion.
Which makes sense.
That is the whole analysis.
That's the brand confusion.
Is anyone confused that this is Jack Daniels?
Does anyone?
No.
And listen, if you're reaching for a chew toy and thinking it's Jack Daniels, maybe you should stop drinking.
Absolutely. Okay? Good point.
Because, do you think that your senses that Jack Daniels might lose this?
I think Jack Daniels loses.
I think they should lose.
I think they lose.
I don't know how it got that far.
I don't either. Brad Young, awesome. Thank you so much for coming out to Fish Fry Friday. We really... great seeing you, because we talk on the phone all the time. Well, on our, sometimes it sounds like you're in the studio, but we fake people out because you have this cool little system that gets you on from your office or your home. But thank you so much for coming by here. We'll talk soon. We're going to wrap things up. We have an audio cut of the day still to come here. 97.1 FM Talk. Hang in there. Well, it might even be a miracle that I made it here to the Knights Columbus Hall this afternoon, or the Kiesel Banquet Center, because my GPS was guiding me into the back of the building and there was a gate. And Kevin Loess is with us, who invited us and helped us put this together. And I want to thank you for that. I think you were nice enough to open up the gate at that point, just in case that happened to anyone
else. We had
you
locked out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That was nice. This has been an awesome fish fry. Now, I have not. Everybody else has tried the food, so I'm going to have to be the final judge on that. I've heard
delicious.
Great things, but you got a huge crowd out here. You're thinking how many meals? Between 1,300 and 1,500, right?
We normally do, about 1,200, 1,500 on a good night. This is a little off because of the rain, but, I think it's... scared some folks away. But, we'll do between 1,000 and 1,500.
One of the things that's interesting, and I think why people love the fish fries, is the menus are a little different from place to place. So what do you feature out here?
Well, we have catfish, cod, shrimp. Our big thing is we love to feed the little kids for free. So, they'd like the pasta, the mac and cheese pizza. Yeah,
it's
a big fan of theirs, and the chocolate cupcakes.
Awesome. Yeah, you know what? I don't know. Maybe it's because of that, but I did notice. This is just anecdotal and observation. I noticed more kids here than I did in some of the other ones.
Yeah.
So
you've
got good family representation here. We mentioned with Jim, I know that you're involved with the Christmas tree lot too, aren't you?
Correct, I was, yes.
They do great work out here, so remember the Knights of Columbus Hall during the holiday season as well. You still got two more to go, though, right? Next weekend and Good Friday.
Correct.
All right.
Correct.
Well, thanks for having us. I really appreciate it. We had a great time this afternoon. The time goes by very quickly. We've had several people who have been here that came out specifically to see us. That's always appreciated. So
thank you.
The accommodations
are
great. Kevin, thank you.
And
Jim,
and I would just like to add, all of our profits go to charity. So,
That's great.
Well, I'm sure we should have probably emphasized that a little bit more.
That's okay.
But that's something I have emphasized with the Christmas tree lot for sure. So give me a little reminder at the holidays, and we'll throw some plugs in for that too. Kevin, great to see you.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate you all being here. Thank you very much.
Coming up on 5:53, we cannot get out of here before we do this afternoon.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
Audio cut of the day is sponsored by my friends at the Good Feet Store. It's all about comfort, energy, performance, and pain relief. In Washington, D.C. today, the House, not the Senate, but the House passed something called the Parents' Bill of Rights, and the Dems, the Libs, went nuts on it. Here they are.
Don't we want our children to know that slavery was wrong, as I fight against slavery today that still exists?
Bills like this make schools more hostile, and make no mistake, it results in hate, bigotry, and yes, sometimes death of our students.
How pathetic, how dreadful, how disgraceful. We want to terrorize the very people who love our children. Our teachers are sacrificial lambs.
When we talk about progressive values, I can say what my progressive value is, and that is freedom over fascism.
Extreme MAGA Republicans don't want the children of America to learn about the Holocaust.
See, those are all such lies. There's nothing in this bill. There's nothing in the bill in Missouri. There's nothing in Florida that prevents you from teaching about the Holocaust or slavery.
No.
And Jane, you know this. This is all BS hyperbole on the part of your progressive friends there, like AOC. Here's Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House.
Democrats believe that parents shouldn't have a say in their kids' education and to actually know what the reading material is. Democrats believe that was extreme. Democrats didn't believe that in this bill we say parents have a right to be heard, that they should be able to go to school board meetings and not be called terrorists, that they could have a say, but Democrats thought that was too extreme. Parents should have a right to know where their tax dollars are being spent in the schools, the budgets, but Democrats thought that was too extreme. Today was a win for every mother, every father, but most importantly, for every student in America.
There you go. That's our audio cut of the day. We'll wrap things up here from Cottleville. I'm going to get some fish. I don't know about you guys. Have been eating all afternoon.
Yeah, I'm full.
Yeah, we're done.
Yeah, I've been smelling it and watching it. How are the desserts, by the way?
Delish.
Oh, awesome. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, we had a great time out here. And thanks to Kevin
thanks
and
to
Jim Sorrell. We got to thank Fred and everyone else. Abby was out here this afternoon. We got Gary back in the studio. Who am I missing here this afternoon?
Trisha.
And even Tyler.
Steve came out and helped.
Tyler has been helping out. Tyler was Brian's been here doing some of the engineering. Tyler came in to do duty here for the next couple. I think you're going to be with us on Good Friday as well. So thank you to Tyler. These are not easy broadcasts to pull off.
No, they are not.
I will tell you that. They make it look easy. So thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend. We'll talk on Monday afternoon.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.